This is the Popmatic Podcast for August 24th, 2016. I think I'm a code now.
There doesn't seem to be anyone around.
This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Super Space Ghost Villain Moltar, and joining me today are...
Bill.
Amanda.
Sarah.
And an evil robot. Today, August 24th, in the year 79 AD, Mount Vesuvius erupted, completely enveloping the towns of Pompeii and Herculaneum and deadly ash. Mm. It kicks ash and takes names. I love this. This ash was long thought to be the cause of death of most of Pompeii's residents, but a 2010 study showed that it was likely heat surges of up to 482 degrees Fahrenheit. Oh.
That's hot.
Roasted Romans.
Yum.
Sounds delicious. Also, all this may have actually happened in November, says Jeremy's notes, but today we're going into volcanoes and coming up with some hot takes.
Happy Vesuvius Day.
Yeah, really.
Want to splice in one thing about Sarah being back?
All right.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
That was in my...
Yeah, that random person.
All right. Well, anyway. Oh, yeah, by the way. BT Dubs. Sarah's back, and she's pissed.
Clearly.
Just because you're her daughter.
That we didn't mention her.
We thought no one would notice.
I was just going to roll with it.
A cold open is the opposite of a hot open. Hey, Amanda, who's drinking right now?
At least I didn't do a spit take. Hey. Okay, so happy Vesuvius Day, everybody. When I was growing up and learning piano, I was pretty much a classical-only girl. And I think that's because I was mostly taught that the only music that was, finger quotes, important enough was classical music. So when I was in eighth grade, a band friend of mine introduced me to a new piano artist, and his name was David... L-A-N-Z. Now, I always pronounced it Lance, like rhymes with pants. But when I saw the gentleman in Nashville a few years ago, I learned that he pronounces it Lons, rhymes with Johns.
What is that, Lansy?
I'm from Indiana. We say Lance. I'm going to do my best to say it, you know, correctly, but we'll see how that goes. So anyway, my friend used to hop on the upright in the corner down in the band room and just kind of start wailing away on this song. And for me, it was totally different than what I was personally studying at the time, just for comparison. One of the things I was working on was the first movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, which I talked about in the podcast not too long ago. But the piece she was playing sounded hard but playable, which to me means fun. Let's take a listen.
Lance in my pants.
Lons in your Johns.
Nice. See, I told you you'd join us.
I'm being corrupted on Vesuvius Day. Okay, so when I asked who she was playing, she showed me the book. The piece is called Vesuvius, and it's from the collection is called the David Lons Collection. And I remember reading something David said when he composed the piece. He wanted it to build almost into the chaos that had to have occurred at Pompeii when Vesuvius exploded. I tried to research this and verify and see if I could find this quote, but I wasn't able to. But all of David's music is very representational. And if these weren't his exact words, don't hold me to them. It was most likely his sentiment. It's kind of you can tell by the piece of music. So, the library has a recording of Vesuvius on David's Skyline Fire Dance album. Now, this album was released on the now-defunct Narada label, which is the same label Windham Hill was on for a while. The fun thing about the library's recording is that it's a two-disc set. One disc is all solo piano, which is what David predominantly composes, is what I play. The second disc is orchestral arrangements of the same pieces of music. There are a couple changes. They aren't exactly, like, they don't do all the same 10 songs on both discs. But Vesuvius is number one on both, so you can kind of compare and contrast. The orchestra arrangements were done by Don Davis, who you may recognize. He orchestrates a lot of movies, including The Matrix, so a pretty big name for David to get his music done by. I like playing Vesuvius. It's got some fun patterns, a lot of repetition, but it's not my favorite in this collection. That honor has to go to Skyline Fire Dance Suite. In high school, I actually played the second movement of this piece called The Setting of Two Suns for a talent competition, and I totally won.
Yeah.
That's how I roll.
That's right. Fire dance.
So I still love playing this whole collection of music. I get it out every now and again. They're not that challenging. If you're at an intermediate level, you can probably work a few of these out for yourself. So check out Skyline Fire Dance from the library today if you convince former podcaster Crystal and I to share it. We might not.
So, because we're like, and there's not like a segment of the suite where like, and this is where everybody in Pompeii gets buried in molten ash.
No, there's not like a over. It's like, this was the explosion and this was everywhere he died. It's mostly all explosion.
They could just play it during that like bit from National Geographic from the 80s where they excavated all those people from under the ash and it like freaked out young Mike, where like he had nightmares and stuff. Because like, you know, there's these people screaming it like silently as they die quickly. Like, so what do you got, Bill?
Okay. The beginning of You Only Live Twice, Ian Fleming's novel, starts out, "You only live twice, once when you were born and once when you look death in the face." That saying has absolutely nothing to do with what I want to talk about. I just thought it was a cool way to start.
It is cool.
It is cool.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay. In 1966, the James Bond movies were probably bigger than the Beatles. And that's not an exaggeration, because when the Beatles filmed Help down in Jamaica, there was like 100,000 people showed up to watch. But when James Bond filmed Thunderball down there, it was like double that amount. Mm-hmm. So... And if you think in today's term, they were the equivalent of the Star Wars movies. The Bond movies had carte blanche to do whatever they wanted to do. In the novel, You Only Live Twice, James Bond's arch nemesis, Blofeld, had a lair that was a castle by the sea in Japan. When producer Albert Arbercoli, director Lewis Gilbert, and production designer Ken Adam arrived in Japan, they looked all over in Japan for a castle by the sea, and none could be found. Because I think of monsoons and typhoons and stuff, they just couldn't build it.
They have castles, but it was like a castle.
Then the production team noticed these visually striking volcanoes in Japan. The production team decided to put Blofeld's hideout in a volcano.
Yeah. Hollowed up volcano lair. Awesome. Yep.
The production designer, Ken Adam, who also gave the Bond films a distinctive look, along with Dr. Strangelove. Ken Adam proceeded to draw the elaborate designs, and Albert Broccoli asked, how much would this cost? Ken Adam replied, $1 million. Without batting an eye, the producer said, go for it. Ken Adams stated that if he did not pull this off, he would never work again.
No pressure, though.
After all, this set was more expensive than the first James Bond movie, Dr. No.
I think for $1 million, they could build a castle by the sea.
Yeah, right?
Well, you'd think there'd be other spots in the world that you maybe could find a castle by the sea and just tell us that it was in Japan.
Yeah, that could work, too.
That's what everybody else does.
Wink, wink.
That's why most of Vancouver looks like Southern California. But hey.
It snows so much
here. Who's keeping track?
Ken Adams' massive volcano set, constructed on an outdoor lot at Pinewood Studios in London, England, it was equipped with a movable helicopter platform, a working monorail system, a launch pad, a full-size rocket ship mock-up that could simulate a liftoff rising 50 feet in the air. On top of that, it required 700 tons of structural steel, 200 miles of tubular steel, 200 tons of plaster, 500,000 tubular couplings, 250,000 square yards of canvas, and it was 400 feet tall. I don't know what a lot of that meant. It just sounded cool.
It
cost money, and it sounded awesome. When a studio executive finally saw the completed set, he said, where you're not going to be able to light it. Well, fortunately, they hired Freddie Young, who was the who photographed Lawrence of Arabia and Dr. Zhivago, and he had no problem lighting it, even though he used every light at Pinewood Studio. So the film was made and was a huge success. James Bond lives on today, and you can watch You Only Live Twice on DVD. Michael?
I wonder who got to keep the set when they were done.
I think they blew it up.
Yeah, I think they just demolished it.
Just threw it into the volcano.
I'm going to tell you, that would have been an awesome conversation starter. Why don't you come out back and see my hollowed out little volcano there?
Really? Yeah.
We're having barbecue today.
Meet girls and stuff.
Sit and doctor.
Hire henchmen.
Sit and doctor no set.
Yeah, and just pet my kitty and just...
Not doctor no, but Blofeld. Excuse me.
Oh, yeah. One thing I remember about You Only Live Twice are that Sean Connery goes in, like, yellow face at one point. He has the full, like,
yes.
You know, which is surprising. And his Japanese hosts are all about, like, you know, women here are enchanted by your chest hair, for Japanese men cannot grow this chest hair. It was very...
racist.
So apparently they skimped on writers.
Very odd.
They spent all the money on this on the set. And like,
I think that was the one that Roald Dahl had something to do with.
Well, yeah,
script,
I pointed
right?
that out. There was a trip. I was talking about Roald Dahl, and he wrote the script to that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I remember that in a previous episode. I'm stalling game because I have virtually nothing written. So, home. It's where the heart is. It's very sweet. It's where I feel safest, where I can finally relax, let my hair down, slip off the foot prisons known as shoes. Squelch like carpeting between my naked toes. I don't have to talk to anybody except for my cat, and he doesn't talk back. I don't have to feel the sting of failure when my conversational skills are lackluster. It's the best. But, you know, so I was intrigued when I saw at Borders. This is so long ago that Borders still existed.
I was going to say, when was this? 1974?
Yeah. It was a far out time. I put my Afro comb in my giant fro. And bought the book, Braving Home, Dispatches from an Underwater Town, the Lavaside Inn, and Other Extreme Locales by Jake Halpern. Basically, this Halpern guy was like a journalist, and he was like really interested in like extreme homes. So each of the homes featured in the book have this kind of dangerous aspect to them. The one that has to do with today's topic, the Lavaside Inn in Royal Gardens, Hawaii, is pretty neat. Like, apparently it's one of those, you should look at where your house is when you go and buy it, because it was a neighborhood at the base of a volcano in Hawaii. And they were like, hey, the volcano will never erupt. It's erupted in a couple hundred years, and it totally did.
Repeatedly, right? Like,
it was... basically, it destroyed most of this, like, subdivision this guy had, except for his house.
Mm-hmm.
And he refused to leave. He lived there for over 20 years. I think since the book had come out, he had to finally leave.
I was going
to
ask if it was still, because I read this book, too, and I was going to ask if...
Yeah.
Because he had, like, one road, like, he had one way he could get to his house,
exactly,
like,
yeah.
in and out. Like,
I remember that specifically because, they were like, you need to walk this certain way because you could fall in a sinkhole and die.
Oh. Yeah, because there was, like, active lava underneath the crowd, like, to get to his house. Like, he could walk, but...
Yeah, you could fall into lava or, I mean, it was basically, like, this is before cell phones were really that, you know, and there wasn't really reception if he had one. So, like, you know, you basically starve to death. Or... Yeah, there's a dangerous lava.
I'm glad you found it so amusing.
Well, it's one of those, like, you know, you think you'd leave, but I think I think it was one of those where you got reimbursed for that. Everybody who lived in that neighborhood got reimbursed for their houses. So, like, he could live there for free. So it's one of those, you know, hey, I got a couple hundred thousand dollars.
Okay, I'm pretty cheap, but I think at the point where I'm walking over active lava, I might just, you know, cut my losses and call it a day.
Yeah, agreed.
For this guy, it was not enough, you know? I
mean, at least if he'd have been like a helicopter pilot or something, he could have flown himself out, but he wasn't. He could just...
I think they mentioned that at some point. Yeah, it's just some dude. Like, I don't remember if he had a job or not. It's just, it talked about him like having to walk to town and walk back because of... dangerous ash. The last bit I think I'll talk about today, I thought it was pretty interesting, is Grand Isle, Louisiana, because it's an entire island off the coast of Louisiana that was like formed from, I want to say it was from silt.
Yeah, I think it's from the river silt.
Wow. And in the book, they're making this big deal. It was one of the specific home, but it was people who live on the island and how like they panic whenever there's like a hurricane sighting because it will basically destroy, it will annihilate the entire island.
It's kind of like Galveston. Like it's not high enough above seawater that like when the hurricanes come in, the storm surge will bury the whole island.
Yeah. So. I mean, the impression I got is that the island won't exist. Like it won't just bury it. It'll just be gone. And so, like, the whole book or the whole, like, chapter is the author going there and everybody's glued to their TVs because there's a hurricane coming. And this is, like, the early 90s or early late 90s, early 2000s. This is before Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah,
so I was meaning, you know, I didn't hit 10 today. But I was, maybe you, listeners, future corrections, can look up Wikipedia to see if this island still exists after Katrina. Because I remember when it happened.
Because don't they call them the Storm Riders? Isn't that?
Yeah, it's called Island of the Storm Riders.
Yeah, cause that's what, because I remember when that, because Katrina came, I read that book before Katrina, and I was like, oh, that's Grand Isle. Don't take away Grand Isle.
I know.
You know, so, cause, I mean, I think that there are people that go to Grand Isle when a storm is coming to experience, like they're
because they're nuts.
They're like storm chasers. I mean,
yeah. Because people are dummies.
What they do, so you know. But yeah.
But did you say once like you would ride? You'd be a storm chaser if you could.
I would, but I wouldn't do hurricanes because I'm messing with that.
Yeah.
Like when you know it's going to cause death and destruction 2 weeks out, I'm good. Like tornadoes we can talk about.
Cool.
I could get out of the way, but hurricanes.
Okay. Sure. How about like a tsunami or a
I don't have any interest.
Typhoon.
No. Typhoon and hurricane are they're the same thing. They just rotate different
ways.
Yeah, they're just different
oceans.
Different hemispheres.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. See, I knew a typhoon was an Asian version of something.
Yeah, it rotates the other way just because of where.
Wow.
Yeah.
Science, y'all.
Learn something new today.
I'm dropping some science.
I'm loving this. I read an interesting post-apocalyptic book where the United States got there was so much nuclear stuff in the atmosphere and stuff that the tornadoes leave the United States and they go to Russia as almost like a karmic revenge for destroying the United States.
Hmm.
I don't know if it's scientifically based.
I don't know how that could be physically possible. Thank you, Himalayan mountains. But
yes.
Other than that,
well, maybe they got duked into a nuclear exchange.
That's true. They created the Gulf of Mexico south of Russia.
Before I insert my foot more into mouth, maybe Sarah could go and do her segment. Yeah.
Sure,
why
not?
I'm going to use my hosting powers to deflect.
Dang it, foiled again.
On that note, well, I guess I was the only one that did not choose volcanoes, but I picked its cousin, I guess, a sinkhole.
Evil twin.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Well, for my first appearance as an official podcast team member, I have to say this topic of volcanoes, geography, natural disasters is a nice starting off topic because I have an obsession with Mother Earth's extreme natural features.
You're welcome.
You guys
partly
are...
because I'll probably never climb a mountain in my life.
Mm. No, I don't see the point.
I'm not. Mm. It's cold.
Yeah, cold, hard, difficult.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Everest thing of, like, tracking where you are by the dead bodies of the people who came before.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, that's enough for me. No.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Recently hiked Grand Canyon. That's good enough for me.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and I'll never go deep sea diving, which kind of leads into my topic here, which is deepest freshwater caves in the world, Bushman's Hole in South Africa. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce the...
Mike has 14 jokes. He's trying not to make
it. Yeah, I know. I figured that was going to happen. I'm not going to pronounce what the real name of it is because I can't.
Oh.
But the book is Diving.
It's as funny as Bushman's Hole, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't. It's like Boatman's Goat or something, but it's in there. It's in, I guess it's Afrikaans or whatever.
I find that amusing.
You're making it too easy for us.
I know. Well, that's what I'm here for,
you know,
right?
I have enough wordplay for 10 men.
Well, the book is called Diving Into Darkness. It's by Philip Finch. Without boring you with too many of the minute details, the title of the book basically tells you what's going to happen. Skilled scuba diver Dave Shaw becomes the second diver to reach this cave's depths. Maybe future correction, because I think that's correct. But anyway, and the verb I'm about to use will give a little more context to the tone of the story. Dave Shaw was a man that thrived off of dangerous activities and loved reaching new heights, either above ground or below sea level. Professionally, he was a pilot and flew for the Chinese airline Cathay Pacific. Personally, his passion for diving flourished over a short amount of time, where he silently became one of the most experienced technical divers in the game, reaching a depth of at least 280 meters.
Yeah,
I think the actual human depth is like 332 meters for the lowest. That's the world record, so a little context there. But anyway, his love of the sport came not from reaching these depths, but from the fact that he was in an alien world that no one else has seen or explored. But the sport and art of technical diving has its risks, and unfortunately Dave met these risks on January 8th, 2005. I'm going to stop there and tell you to check the book out if you're interested in finding out what happened. I will tell you this, though. It is worth the read because it's another one of those stories that helps renew your faith in human beings and shows the level of generosity and sacrifice some individuals are willing to make for others. And on top of that, his website that he created when he was diving is still online. It's www.deepcave.com. It hasn't been updated since the accident, so it's kind of interesting to read his future plans and then knowing the ending. So be sure to check that out, too.
Wow. Yeah. I thought, you know, mm-hmm. I had a stone cold bummer earlier. Okay.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Matt.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
We try to clap horribly.
Before knocking my claps.
Well,
maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy, Amanda.
Okay, so a few years ago on the podcast, I celebrated the self-proclaimed Nia Vardalos Day. Now, Vardalos, as you may remember, is the star of a few movies like Connie and Carla and My Life in Ruins. She is a screenwriter in addition to writing a memoir called Instant Mom about the adoption of her daughter. So if none of this is ringing a bell with you, how about My Big Fat Greek Wedding? Do you remember that juggernaut?
Yeah. Spray some Windex on it.
Put some Windex on
it. It's all Greek to me.
So I have good news for you. Vardalos is back for a second, even bigger, even fatter, My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
A long time ago, I had a big fat Greek wedding. Now my daughter is all grown up.
Hope you applied to some local colleges, too.
Why do parents always say dream big when they really mean not too big?
Ian and I are just trying to find a minute to ourselves.
How about another date tonight?
And afterward, oh, satin, slippery like an eel.
Leah!
You're welcome. Shave everything.
You look pretty.
What are you doing?
Dad!
And my family is still too close.
Parents deserve a sex life, too.
This family's always in my business.
Keep your eyeballs open for a nice Greek boy, so one day you can make babies.
They follow me everywhere. I need some air.
Your mom felt the same way about being Greek.
Florida, Texas, New York, these are the colleges I'm applying to. Why do you want to leave me?
Payback.
But there's always...
The priest never signed a wedding license.
A few surprises.
We're not married. I'm a hippie.
Now, my family has come together.
Who says a woman has to be married?
You. All our lives.
The wedding is on!
To pull off another...
Beautiful.
Big, fat Greek wedding.
Take a photo!
All right, pull my neck. One, two, pull!
But you got to remember! Hey! But you gotta remember!
Even though I'm taking a step back, I will always be right here.
Why aren't you in Greek club?
Gotta work hard.
Every day of my life is Greek club.
We come from a long line of strong women. Remember Paris. Protect the Polaki.
Eyes open, knees shut.
If your knees are open, shut your eyes.
The previews kind of made it seem like the wedding in the sequel is about her daughter, but I am thankful to tell you that it is not, because her daughter's only 18, which is kind of a risky age for a marriage. So I'm glad that Vardalos did not go down that road. Instead, it turns out that her parents are the ones who are now officially married. Shocker. Spoiler alert. So in researching his genealogy, in order to prove that he is descended from Alexander the Great, like all good Greeks, Vardalos' fictional dad, Gus, played by Michael Constantine, finds his wedding certificate, but he also finds that the priest never actually signed it. So his current priest won't make it official unless they have another ceremony. So a lot of the movie is kind of the build up to that and if he will propose and all that good drama. So my favorite part about the movie is that all the characters are the same ones from the first movie. Some of them have aged well, some haven't. It's very obvious and a little disappointing that Lainey Kazan, who is Tula's mom, has had a little bit of work done. But it was still nice to get to see everybody. A few of the mostly silent characters in the first movie get some lines here. This includes Grandma Yaya and Tula's cousin, who married Ian's best friend, Mike, who is played by Ian Gomez, who is Vardalos' husband in real life.
Whoa.
Just stay with me on all that. That was very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Is it Joy Fatone in this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Enter the fat one.
He's getting a little late.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Well, there was a Robot Chicken sketch where the whole thing was like a 15-minute like bit where Joy Fatone basically does a Karate Kid-style tournament.
Nice.
And it's called like Enter the Fat One. So every time I see him, like,
he's pleasantly chubby. I will admit that initially I was a little leery of this movie because I was afraid that a wimpy storyline would ruin the first one. But I'm happy to say that this one is almost as good as the original Greek Wedding. I think I watched it about 5 times during the week. I got to check it out from the library, and I did want to give it back, but I will share. I'll be good. So if you haven't seen it yet, definitely get your name on the waiting list. And in the meantime, you can check out all the other movies that Vardalos has done or read her book.
Bill?
Tickling My Fancy is a novel called Listen to Me by Hannah Pittard. The focus of the novel is a married couple whose relationship is under stress. The couple's name is Maggie and Mark. Maggie has recently been a victim of a mugging. A young co-ed in their neighborhood has just been murdered. Could it be the same guy? The couple go on a road trip to see Mark's parents. The road trip is fraught with storms, paranoia, and 18-wheelers. It's a sinister version of Two for the Road. Listen to Me is an enjoyable summer read. Listen to Me by Hannah Pittard is a road novel where you don't know where you're going until you get there. Mike?
Well, gang, I kept threatening you to wax poetic on something Brazilian. And I think now that it's the last week of the Olympics and they've finally gone through all the BS sports like, water polo and pinball.
Handball.
We can now get to chess wants to become a Olympic sport, as well as Scrabble.
Mm. Well, I mean, there are some weird ones out there that I don't understand. That's a sport? Okay, whatever.
What's an 8-letter word that begins with B and ends in T? Anyway, so I checked out a book recently on an architect named Oscar Niemeyer from Toschen Press. I didn't write down the author because I am a loser.
The author is Philip Jodido. As an aside, Evil Robot loves handball.
But it's really interesting. It's a very modernist architecture, a lot of like flowing curves and, you know, sensuous designs. The cover of the book is the Cathedral of Brasilia, which actually does kind of look like a volcano. It's got this kind of cone shape. He also co-worked with Le Corbusier on the United Nations headquarters. He built designed a lot of buildings at the capital of Brazil, Brasilia. You know, it's one of those, when a country comes on its own and they decide to move their capital inland, you know, it's one of those artificial capitals like Ankara or Washington, D.C. Yeah. The downside is the book doesn't really go into like the bad sides. Like I've read other things that say that Niemeyer's designs, people don't actually like living and or working in these buildings.
So form does not follow function.
Yeah, you know, you're in a room that's a giant wedge, you know, because it's like, oh.
It's like, where do you put your desk in a wall like, where you're
yeah, exactly, yeah. my couch does not, you know, curve. You know, I can't watch TV on this wall. This makes no sense, but everything looks really neat, and maybe I'll mention it later on the year, my best of, because I really, really like this book. It got me more interested in...
Is this a pictorial book, or is it...
Yeah, it's mostly pictures.
Yeah.
The intro is like a lot of biographical stuff about Niemeyer, who... He lived it to be 104.
Oh, yeah.
And he worked it till the end. Like they had like distinct periods in his career, and then it goes into like it'll have a picture of the building on one side and like what that building is, and you know information about it on the other page. And so, and it's one of those really thin books, and it's kind of like a best of kind of thing because he worked for a very long time. I think it was like 70 years. Good stuff. Oscar Niemeyer, check it out. Pretty absurd.
Side note on the Olympics, why isn't dodgeball a sport in the Olympics?
It should be.
Like, there's handball, which I don't get. I watched it one day.
But table tennis is in. Why wouldn't dodgeball
be? Right. Dodgeball is the best sport in the world. But that's just me. Whatever.
You need to send the IOC the dodgeball movie.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Ever since you said the word dodgeball, I'm like, you could dodge a blank, but you could dodge a ball. And I'm like, brick?
Rip torn.
You know, scissors?
Sidetracked here. Anyway, get back on track. Well, I want to say that the new Harry Potter book is tickling my fancy right now, but I haven't read it yet. So
I just got my copy yesterday.
Yeah,
so.
I've got it. I'm just waiting to finish another book, and I will. Mm-hmm. I'm reading The Lovely Bones right now, and that's kind of my follow-up book, considering how depressing that book is.
Well, I think that I haven't read The Lovely Bones because I know what it's about, but I feel like you need to finish it. Like, you shouldn't, like, stop halfway through and, like, go to something else and then come back.
get through that bummer.
Yeah. Well, anyway, okay. So maybe next week that'll be my obsession. Harry Potter, not Lovely Bones. But instead, I'm going to reference some must-listen-to music. I discovered the artist Halsey thanks to Pandora and checked out the rest of her album Badlands thanks to Hoopla. Which, since I have purchased said album, after listening to it, I've come to two conclusions. One, she's like a less small and melancholy Lana Del Rey, which for me isn't a bad thing. I'm not sure about the rest of you, but two, the album is really good, hence why I bought it. The song Hold Me Down is what hooked me. The song New Americana, I think, has possibly been on the radio. I know I've heard it other places.
Cigarettes in tiny liquor bottles, just what you'd expect inside her new Balenciaga. Viral mess turned dreams into an empire, self-made success. Now she rolls with Rockefellers. Survival of the richest, the city's ours until the fall. Their Monaco and Hampton's bound, but we don't feel like outsiders at all. We are the new Americana, high on legal marijuana. Please don't biggie.
And the songs Roman Holiday and Colors are currently on repeat on iTunes, so yeah, check that out.
Does anybody have corrections but me?
I just have one final Olympic update, then I promise I'll stop talking about it for 2 years. So at the age of 35 years old, Anthony Irvin, my boy who I've been talking about for 3 weeks, finally did win the gold medal in the men's 50-meter freestyle, which is pretty amazing that he won the same gold medal in the same race 16 years apart as a sprinter. That's pretty big. So if you don't know, the 50 free is just one straight length down the pool. It was a pretty awesome race. I don't know that I would have bet on Irvin to win gold, but I was watching it, and then, like, you know, they start, and then, like, it just splashes. Everybody just splashes. Like, you can't see because they're just working so hard to get down there. And then, like, the water stops, and someone goes, yes! And this time it was Irvin. He won. And teammate Nathan Adrian also got bronze, so U.S. did good. And who knows what will happen in 2020 in Tokyo.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. Konnichiwa.
And I promise no more Olympics.
I have collection. So Shakes versus Shav is George Bernard Shaw's last completed dramatic work. The last play that he wrote yet was still published but incomplete, was called Why She Would Not. Bono's name is Paul David Hewson. He should have a son named Sonny and a daughter named Yoko, but instead his kids have boring names like Eve, Jordan, John, and Elijah. It was Grace Slick who jokingly wanted to name her daughter God, lowercase g. Her daughter's name is actually China. Still not as fun. Should be a Chinese goddess.
With lowercase c.
Shen Yun or something.
Yeah. Capital H.
Wait, the wrestler who just died is Grace Slick's kid? What? The documentary I mentioned is called Meet the Hitlers. It's actually a very interesting take on the power of names and, you know, naming people and stuff. Most of the people in the movie are really sweet, but they have the name Hitler in some way.
Might change that.
That would be a good idea? They even find a graveyard in, like, I think Illinois, that's the Hitler Cemetery. And the Earl of Oxford is also championed by the anti-Stratfordians as a possible writer of Shakespeare's plays, yet he died in 1604. But Shakespeare didn't retire until 1611. So, like, I guess he just gave him a bank of plays to...
Just, yeah, he had some free time, so he puts them aside for...
Yeah, yeah, you know. He had to retire in 1611 because he ran out of plays.
That's right. Yeah. That's all she wrote. Yeah. Okay.
Why'd you have to die over Foxford? Oh. Well, anyway, for more information on Liars and cool documentaries and Olympics some more, you can go to...
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week.
Labor Day?
Labor Day, I believe.
Next week. Labor Day. Next week we talk about Labor Day stuff. Yes. Labor Day, you know, Maypole.
That's May Day.
May the workers of the world unite.
Oh. Sounds fun.
You know.
In Mike's defense, I sent him a text that, like, I mean, literally...
Like 20 minutes before starting or something.
And said, you're hosting today, so...
Yeah.
You're doing good.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
I'm the host without the most.
You need to work on your clapping a little bit, but the rest of it's awesome.
Yeah. It's good. Make a little louder.
My clapping could be stronger.